We basically just went through all of these different coverages, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, especially because there are too many words this late in the day. But this is basically spelling out what the actual coverage is doing. You can look at it at your leisure. I did also include the technology errors and omissions liability. And I raised this because as an insurance broker, we're frequently asked by our clients, can you review this contract and tell me if our insurance meets these requirements? And what I see frequently happening is that everybody is on the cyber bandwagon, so that is always a requirement. However, people don't really understand how those policies work. The easiest way I can say it is when you're dealing with a vendor and you're asking them for evidence insurance, if they're providing services to you, even if they're touching your data, you want them to have E&O coverage because they're providing you a professional service. Cyber coverage, the privacy liability coverage, is for your own information. It doesn't cover, if you're a vendor and you lose somebody's data, the privacy liability coverage is not going to be triggered because it's not your data. It's somebody else's data. What's going to be triggered is their E&O or their network security coverage because of the promises they made to protect your data. So it's really important to understand what you're asking for in these contracts. While ultimately I always say that, there are two different contracts entered in by different parties. They're never going to line up exactly, but you definitely don't want them to be so off base that you have no assurances that they have any insurance to cover a situation. So it's really important when dealing with vendors that you're asking for the appropriate insurance. And typically what we see is when we have a service provider that's providing technology services, maybe it's your cloud provider, you're using a SaaS company, that they have technology E&O, and it's typically blended together with their network security and their privacy liability coverage as well. So it's a pretty easy ask because that's what all of the tech companies buy.
All right.
So it
what
sounds
are the risks?
Yeah, it sounds wonderful.
what
is it not going to cover?
And the answer to some degree is we don't totally know yet. It's new enough that there hasn't been a whole lot of litigation over these forms. And so to some degree, our job is kind of spotting things and seeing what we think might come up. Because even today, I've found that in my experience, carriers have been pretty cooperative. And generally speaking, they haven't been denying claims unless they're pretty obviously not covered. There may be fights over how much they should pay for things. But they're still sort of, the carriers are still sort of in sell mode to get people to buy these things. So some of the things to consider, who's covered? And that sort of goes to what Becky was talking about, how you need to know, is this actually covering me for losses or is it covering someone else? And then it also, I think, does go to your vendor management. I've had clients come to me and say, well, can't I just not buy the insurance and then I can just put in my contracts that they have to buy the insurance? Don't do that. You don't have control of the process. There are definitely going to be holes in the coverage. You may not be insured for what all your losses may be stemming from that, even if the breach originated with the vendor. So that's an important thing. Sublimits we talked about.
I was just going to add one thing. Frequently people will ask for additional insured status under a cyber policy, thinking that that will give them access to the first party coverages like notification and forensics. All policies, for the most part, are written, the first-party coverages are only benefit the named insured. So it's also important to understand that just asking for additional insured status is not going to get you the breadth of coverage under the policy.
Yep. Knew or should have known, that's a tricky one in all kinds of policies, because should have known is a rather, squishy standard. But other than sort of the obvious squishiness of it, there's also the issue of who should have known. Did the employee who pressed the button and realized something was wrong but didn't report it, does that jeopardize your coverage? So what we've done in negotiating these policies is we've made it like someone in C-level or higher knew or should have known. We try to make it knew of the breach, but it's important to make sure that you're getting to a certain level so that you're not jeopardizing coverage if some very low-level person who didn't report something maybe knew that something was amiss.
The only tricky part about that, because we also, carriers are more actively including that kind of C-suite language, but the trap of it is then clients feel like, well, I didn't know about it, so it doesn't count. I can report it whenever. These are all claims made and reported or first discovered and reported policies. So you still have to report it within the policy year, even if you didn't know about it. You still can get into late reporting problems. It's easier to make the argument, well, the C-suite didn't know about it, but if there's any evidence whatsoever that anybody within the organization knew about it, you're going to have a reporting problem.
Yeah, this is a prophylactic thing, but not an excuse that folks should use to delay reporting.
Absolutely.
Breach of contract exclusions. There have been a number of suits where clients have been sued for not adequately protecting information they had that belonged to others that they were required to protect under a contract. So you don't want just a broad breach of contract exclusion. And carriers have been, in my experience anyway, very willing to include exceptions.
And we're seeing more and more of them just adding. For a long time, there was just the standard breach of contract, except for liability that you would have had in absence of the agreement. And now we're seeing a lot of them including specific carvebacks on your tech E&O. We're seeing them include carvebacks for failure to perform to a reasonable standard. And we're also seeing more of them saying breach of contract, failure to protect information that you're obligated to protect by contract. So I think there is an awareness that this is a problem and that the policies are not triggering properly if they don't include these exceptions.
And I'd also note, because we talk a lot about negotiating policies, and I think it needs to be noted that there are a lot of different types of policies out there. We talked about sort of the different buckets they fit in, but even within one bucket, like network security, there are a lot of different options available.